we'll now get into this whole thing of the courts. We went around saying, what are some of the issues we want to look at, or why the courts of women? And so since what we did was more a kind of a background in the meeting, I'm going into the nitty-gritty and then come back to the larger questions. Would this be a way to do it? So then you'd get a grasp of what the courts are about, and then we could come with the questions again. Okay? Okay, Connie? Okay. Entonces, you asked some very good questions.
Okay. Vamos a hablar específicamente de las cortes de mujeres. Se habló muy generalmente sobre ellas durante la presentación. Entonces, lo que vamos a hacer ahora es entrar mucho más detalladamente a lo que son las cortes de mujeres para después volver a regresar a ver un panorama mucho más amplio, si eso les parece a ustedes.
Okay, so the first point is on the violence against women. The violence against women in all our societies is not only increasing in quantum, is escalating, but it is also intensifying. The forms are becoming more brutal.
La violencia contra las mujeres en todos nuestros países no solo están aumentando en cantidad, sino que se están volviendo cada vez más brutales.
And much of this violence is covered by a huge silence. The violence is privatized. It's domesticated. It's seen as this is something that is very personal. So if a woman is beaten or battered or raped or burnt, as women are burnt in my country, it's always, you go to the police or you go to the institutions of law, and you will always be told that this is a private matter. It's domestic. Have you all had that experience? It's something that is personal.
El gran problema, uno de los grandes problemas con la violencia contra las mujeres es que se privatiza o se domestica, o sea, que se transforma en algo individual. Que cuando una mujer va al tribunal a demandar o a reportar una violencia contra ella, se trata como un caso individual, doméstico, particular.
So, the connected point would be by privatizing these crimes. We are refusing these crimes, their public face, and therefore their political significance. So we push them, we push them into the realm of that which is domestic and that which is not to be seen and not to be heard. And by doing this, we do not let these crimes come into public discourse. They don't have a public face and they simply disappear. And so the violence against women is increasing and the silence of that violence is also increasing.
La violencia también se está silenciando porque al privatizarlas, al volverlo algo privado, doméstico, se le quita su componente político, su componente público, y por lo tanto se silencia. Entonces, no es solo el hecho de que aumenta la violencia, sino que aumenta el silencio sobre la violencia.
As we went around the table, you imagine in a small group like this, we've already mentioned about 6 or 7 different kinds of violence. So in sheer quantum, the crimes against women are crimes against half of humanity. And yet, there is all this silence that surrounds it. So,
al pasar por este cuarto, inmediatamente por aquí en este pequeño grupo nos dimos cuenta, o por lo menos se mencionaron a 6, 7 diferentes tipos de violencia contra la mujer.
And these kinds of violence are completely hidden. Nobody speaks about it. Nobody talks about it. When Wildo says, you know, Wildo comes to a meeting like this and he says, there is so much of violence from where I'm coming from, but nobody knows even what we can begin to do. So I am just going to share with you a little experience that we call the courts of women. So I'll go into it and then we'll come back to the issues in the region.
Entonces hay una gran cantidad de diferentes tipos de violencia contra las mujeres, una violencia que afecta a la mitad de la humanidad y sin embargo no sabemos al respecto, está completamente silenciado. Entonces vamos ahora a hablar sobre específicamente las cortes de la mujer.
So now it's about 20 years ago when I was working a lot in the, it becomes personal at some point because I founded these courts of women. But I was working very much in the area of human rights. And I always found that whether we looked at the human rights discourse theoretically or whether we looked at it in praxis, the women had been left out. And then I don't want to go into the history or the philosophy of the rights discourse, but you see there that women were left out of the whole frame. And because women were left out of the frame, women's knowledges, women's ways of thinking, women's survivals were never came into that discourse on human rights. Mm-hmm. It came into the discourse by way of, tell me if I'm going too much, Alejandro, I just want to finish this point, mm-hmm. by way of saying that, you know, Oh, women in development. So we have development, but there's no women in development. So just let's add a women's program to development. The basic premises of that development model was never touched. So the same thing happened with human rights. Oh, there's human rights, but there's no women in human rights. So let's create something called women in human rights. Never touching the basic tenets of the human rights model. Okay, he translates now.
Desde hace como 20 años trabajo en derechos humanos. Cuando vemos los derechos humanos tanto en la teoría como en la práctica, lo que vemos es que las mujeres no están incluidas. Y por lo tanto no entran dentro del discurso de derechos humanos. Entonces lo que sucede es que se hacen modificaciones para incluir a las mujeres en los derechos humanos, pero eso no altera la premisa básica del concepto de derechos humanos. Es como que se incluye, como que se anexa, pero no modifica la idea básica de los derechos humanos.
So what was needed at that point, 20 years ago, was to say, maybe we needed to create these spaces where we could hear the women. No, women's voices had been inaudible. Women were invisibilized. The crimes against women were invisibilized. So at a very basic, a very fundamental level, we began to create these spaces that we called the courts of women, where women would come and really speak the violence against them. It started as simple as that, saying we needed to hear the women. We needed to break that silence. We needed that women would speak her word from suffering, naming the crimes and saying it. And that is how we started the courts of women.
Pues hace 20 años lo que surgió es la necesidad de crear espacios donde las mujeres pudieran expresar su propia realidad, donde las mujeres pudieran expresar su propio sufrimiento, su propia experiencia. Y así surgen las Cortes de la Mujer como algo tan sencillo como esto, como un espacio para la expresión de la propia experiencia de la mujer a través de su propia voz.
I remember the first court that we did was in Pakistan. And you know that the violence against women in India, Pakistan and South Asia, it is like, I don't know, all our societies have different forms of violence. But in Pakistan, you have this, once you divorce a woman, then in order that nobody should marry her again, you throw acid sometimes. So the acid throwing, like the dowry burning in India, is very common. I tell the whole story, it's a simple story. So in the court of women here, the first court that we had, I remember this woman coming, and she was completely covered in a burqa, in a parda, and she told her story. She told her story of how her husband had divorced her. And then she said, and then he threw this acid on me, and she dropped her veil. And, till today, it always seems to be the first story that comes to my mind. She just had two holes in her mangled face to breathe. And that was Mujiba. So, I think I wasn't at that time. I just had $500. I had this dream. The collective that I worked with said, it's another crazy idea of hers, so leave her. And from that day, something else began to happen. Because I realized that we were not more than, I think we were about 300. It was a small court, it was the beginning. And about 300 women sitting in this room, and nobody could speak. And then I understood the power of the testimony, the power of somebody speaking the crime against her. I'm speaking about somebody else. Academics would write about somebody else. Activists would march for somebody else. But when women are telling their own stories, it calls forth another kind of listening. We listen in a different way. I believe we learn to listen in a different way.
Se está hablando de la primera corte. En la violencia en la India y en Pakistán.
Pakistán.
Toman formas sumamente duras, sumamente terribles. Entonces, el primer caso, en la primer corte que tuvieron, era de una mujer. Sucede mucho en la India que por causa de la dote, ¿no? Cuando hay un divorcio, muchas veces los hombres intentan matar a las mujeres, les avientan ácido. Entonces, esta es una mujer de Pakistán que llega completamente cubierta en una burka. Y dice que su marido se divorció de ella y le aventó ácido para quemarla. y entonces se quita el velo y revela un rostro en el cual solo existen pues los dos agujeritos de los ojos, de la nariz. Y en este momento es una corte muy pequeña, porque la primera eran como 300 mujeres, en ese momento nadie puede hablar, hay un silencio completo. Y entonces se da cuenta del poder que existe en el testimonio. O sea, que el académico escribe sobre esto, el activista sale y marcha a favor de esto, pero el testimonio en primera persona de quien sufre la violencia, eso nos lleva a otro tipo de escucha.
Since then, that was the first court in Pakistan, we've held 37 courts all over the world. They've been mostly in the global south, not mostly, always in the global south. And on issues that, when we began, we started with what was called personal violence. Because you must think, 20 years ago, it was still the women's question, at least for us in India. And so it was, the violence against women was always the violence that was connected with the home, no? Domestic violence, the battering, the beating, and as I said to you, the burning of women in India. As we went on, we started to see that because even in our thinking, we were changing to see that every question was the woman's question. So we started to look at poverty and the feminization of poverty. You know, we started to look at the economic blockade and the women's the violence against women of the blockade. Or we looked at wars and we looked at the rape in wars, from the comfort women of the Second World War to Bosnia and to Rwanda for ethnic cleansing. So the courts have also evolved over the 20 years, and so sometimes I'm not going to tell you the story in a linear way, but I'm telling it to you more in a circular way. So from the first court in Pakistan, we reached the 37 courts, some being local, national courts, some regional courts, and some that were world courts. Okay?
Desde entonces ha habido 37 diferentes cortes, todas ellas en el sur global. Y al inicio de estas cortes empezó con una cuestión de la violencia personal o la violencia doméstica, la violencia en el hogar. Esto fue cambiando con el tiempo y se dieron cuenta de que todas las cuestiones son cuestiones de la mujer. Entonces, por ejemplo, al analizar la pobreza, es la pobreza y cómo esto afecta a la mujer. ¿Cuál es el lugar de la mujer en la pobreza? Las cuestiones económicas y la mujer, la cuestión de la guerra y la violación de las mujeres. Entonces, las cortes como concepto fueron evolucionando en el tiempo, llegando a ahora a tener cortes a nivel nacional, regional o mundial.
So I'll just describe very briefly, let's say, what I call the five moments of the court. Then you get an idea of what this court is about. Because you think that we use the court in a very mimetic way, and we're just laughing at the court. They're not the courts that you see in the existing and the dominant juridical way, but they are the courts of women, you know? And I can only say this by telling you the little story when we were doing the Arab court in Lebanon, the first Arab court that we did in Beirut. And of course, we find all kinds of ways to work with the women's groups, to work with the women who have some kind of ways to allow us the space to hold those courts. And we had got everybody who was anybody in Lebanon to be in that court. But the day before, the mullahs in the mosque started to say, "What is this that we hear about in the press? A court, but a court of women, you know? This is the big thing, right?" So this is what it's about. It's, in a way, it's a trespass. It's a way in which the courts of women are breaking new ground. They are searching, because, as I said this morning, we locate the courts in a discourse of dissent. You can't think of the courts of women in the dominant discourse. Then it's not a court of women. But the courts of women are in that alternative space, in challenging the rights discourse, challenging development, challenging the wars and the weapons culture, challenging militarization, challenging the kind of drug wars, challenging from that point of view, and then creating these spaces where the women's speaking and bringing the testimony on very political issues. That's why I said today, it's creating a space but infusing it with a new political vision. So the issues that we take are very political issues in the courts of women. Alejandro, dear friend.
Las cortes tienen un aspecto mimético, que de hecho se están como burlando de lo que son las cortes en general. Son cortes, pero son cortes de mujeres. Entonces habla, por ejemplo, de las cortes árabes en Beirut, donde se empezaron a organizar estas cortes de mujeres, y de repente vienen los mulás preguntándose, bueno, ¿qué es esto? Con cortes, pero cortes de mujeres, ¿qué significa esto? Aunque está desafiando los conceptos. Entonces la idea de las cortes es justamente, son cortes de ir a contracorriente, de desafiar los discursos hegemónicos, discursos sobre la militarización, discursos sobre la guerra contra las drogas o contra el terrorismo, etcétera. Es creando estos espacios donde es posible el testimonio de la mujer en la primera persona, pero con una visión política, o sea, politizar el testimonio de la mujer.
So the first moment in the core of the court is the testimonies of women. Okay?
Va a hablar de los cinco momentos de las cortes. El primero es los testimonios de la mujer.
And the testimony is said in the first person, in the language of suffering, in the way that she wants to tell her story. This is the text of the court.
El testimonio es en primera persona, en el lenguaje del sufrimiento, de la manera en que la mujer quiere expresar su sufrimiento. Este es el texto de la corte.
If you remember, this morning we talked about how the social sciences have led us to separate the knowledges, right? The rational and the affective. So what the court does is we try to put this together so that we can then offer another way to knowledge. And the subjective testimony of the woman bringing her testimony is then put into an objective context, an analytical context. So the second moment of the court is the analytical voice of the court. Why are you smiling at me? Is the analytical voice of the court.
Hablamos hoy en la mañana sobre cómo las ciencias sociales tienden a separar el conocimiento en diferentes áreas, en diferentes sectores. Lo que las cortes hacen es el movimiento inverso, es unir para de esta manera llegar a un otro tipo de conocimientos. Y en esto hay el transformar de la experiencia subjetiva a lo analítico.
Let me
Y
give you
este
an
es el segundo
example.
momento, es
The
la
second
cuestión
one.
analítica.
For example, Alejandro, if we are doing the court, as we did the courts on poverty in Africa, then the woman bringing her testimony, and I'm sorry that I didn't bring that with me, but women bringing their testimonies would speak on how what poverty meant to them in her meant to her in her life. This would be the first moment of the court. Then, when I say the analytical voice, it would be somebody like Wangari Maathai or Vandana Shiva or somebody who would put the context, talk about World Bank, IMF, structure adjustment programs, natural resources, wars for natural resources, diamonds, timber, minerals. That is from where then you start to understand her testimony. So her testimony is just not her testimony of pain. It is her testimony of pain, but her testimony of pain has been created by the kind of powers, multinationals, governments. So we take on board all this kind of thing as the analytical voice of that. That's the second moment of the court, okay?
Entonces, un ejemplo de cómo esto funcionaría en las cortes, sobre la pobreza en África, por ejemplo. Viene un testimonio personal de una mujer sobre su experiencia con la pobreza, lo que significa la pobreza para ella personalmente. Viene un segundo momento, que es cuando alguien analiza, transforma esta experiencia en análisis al colocarla en el contexto del Banco Mundial, del Fondo Monetario Internacional, de las cuestiones de las luchas por los recursos naturales, etcétera. Entonces, a partir del testimonio viene el segundo paso, que es la cuestión analítica para llegar a un nuevo entendimiento.
The third moment, I'm going through this very quickly because we don't have much time. The third moment is what I call the moment of resistance. So the women who bring the testimony of pain. And then the moment of the court of resistance can be individual women, can also be the movement and women's groups that are really working with, say, the court on trafficking that we did recently in Bali. We did the Southeast Asia, that was our last court, the Southeast Asia Court of Women on Trafficking and Migration and HIV. Sylvia was a jury at that court. Now, there you see that the women who are trafficked and and are migrants, but there are also voices of resistance. Many have been trafficked and they are in a very difficult situation. And almost all, no, all the testifiers that came to that court had HIV. All. So, you know, when you start to do the courts, you start to learn and to understand in a totally different way. No books bring you that. No, nothing. You have to sit and listen to this to understand. And what are the strengths of survival of the women? So they are also the resistors. They are also survivors. You know, they are just not victims. And they don't want to be called victims also, because they have also survived. So this is the third moment of the court, which is the moment of resistance, which brings in then not only individual women resistance, but groups and social movements, and that is their place in the court.
So el tercer momento es el momento de la resistencia. El momento en el que el dolor se transforma en resistencia, que puede ser resistencia individual, pero puede ser resistencia de grupos, de movimientos. Y cita el ejemplo de las cortes sobre el tráfico de mujeres, migración y HIV, en el cual Silvia fue jurado. Y dice que en esta corte, por ejemplo, todas las presentes tenían HIV. Entonces, este tipo de corte, este momento de compartir todo esto, trae un tipo de entendimiento totalmente diferente. Lo que es importante es que lo que están mostrando es la fuerza de la sobrevivencia. O sea, que no son solamente víctimas, sino que son personas que resisten. Entonces, el tercer momento es este momento de la resistencia.
Yes, Anna. The fourth moment is a moment of the jury. Here we invite wise women and men to be on this jury and to receive the testimony. And then what they are giving, because I told you, this is really a court of conscience. This is no locus standi. We cannot give the kind of punishment or perpetrators of the crime, no. It's really to create another way to understand, that this is another way to knowledge. And I haven't met anybody in these 20 years and 37 courts who have come out of the court saying that it never touched me. I think it touches all of us in very deep ways because of the kind of honesty and sincerity and the courage of the women. The courage of the women to bring their testimony and to share that testimony. So the fourth moment is the moment of the jury, the moment of wisdom in the court, where we never look for women and men who have legal kinds of backgrounds. On the other hand, it's the poets, it's the artists, it's the dreamers, the philosophers, who are then able to help us to move into this terrain that the courts are moving into, which is looking for new notions and new ways to justice. Something that I talked about there, so I'm not going to repeat it here, okay? But looking for new notions and new ways to justice. The fourth moment.
El cuarto momento es el momento del jurado, donde diferentes hombres y mujeres sabios y sabias se reúnen para recibir estos testimonios. Y la idea de la corte es la idea de la conciencia, ¿no?
Entonces, it's a court of conscience.
Es una corte de conciencia.
Yeah.
Sí, con la idea de crear otro tipo de entendimiento y otro tipo de conocimiento. En toda su experiencia nunca ha visto nadie que haya pasado por esta experiencia, que no haya sido tocado por la experiencia. Entonces es una corte de conciencia, y donde toca es a través de la honestidad, de la sinceridad y del valor de estas mujeres en su testimonio. Entonces este cuarto momento es el momento de la sabiduría, ¿no? Del jurado, de la sabiduría. Las personas que están como jurados no son personas necesariamente con que vienen de una experiencia de la legalidad, sino son soñadores, son poetas, son filósofos, son personas que son capaces de transformar estos testimonios en nuevas formas de conocimiento y de comprensión.
And the fifth moment, Alejandro, is what I call the moment of the aesthetic. And this is very important. You may ask me, we are looking at testimonies that have so much of pain, and how do we move to this aesthetic? Why do I always say there must be the aesthetic moment? Because in the court, listening to those testimonies, there is much pain. And pain can often paralyze us. Pain can make us feel hopeless. There's no hope. What can we do? So we have to find, even through those little cracks, some lights. And to mix the kind of pain and politics and poetry. I think that's the way, that's what the courts are about. It's about the pain and the politics and the poetry.
El quinto momento es el momento de la estética. O sea, lo que hay aquí son testimonios con dolor, ¿no? Y la pregunta es cómo transformar estos testimonios con dolor en estética, ¿sí? Porque lo que sucede es que el dolor puede paralizarnos y puede quitarnos toda esperanza. ¿Cómo encontrar un poco de luz y un poco de esperanza dentro de este dolor? Y ese es el proceso de este quinto punto, la transformación de este dolor en estética. Es lo que, como lo resumiría, sería dolor con la política, con la poética.
And we use for this the poetic visuals, which I'm going to show you one or two of, or the dance in Indonesia, because they are so beautiful, the dances. We use dance a lot in Indonesia. Or the songs as we used it in Cuba, because in Cuba it was more the song and the dance and the poetic visuals and other creative ways. So there's also a lot of activity around the court, creative activities around the court.
Y entonces usan diferentes mecanismos como formas visuales poéticas, como formas de danza que se utilizan mucho en la India, porque hay una relación muy fuerte con la danza o con la música, como en el caso de Cuba. Otras formas poéticas, estéticas.
Do you have any questions till now, or can I just show you one or two? Any questions till now?
Let's do this
first, okay? Now, what I'm going to... I've tried to find one that doesn't have words, so Alejandro, by the time he gets used to translating it, we'll go to the next one. But this one was, you know, before the courts, we have a gathering. It takes different forms. The Women in Black, of those of you who are familiar with the Women in Black movement, but otherwise it's a gathering of women to really prepare ourselves to receive the testimonies the next day. The one I chose for you is called Senzenina. It's in Swahili, in Nairobi. This court was held in 1999. It was the World Court of Women on Poverty, I think it was, in Nairobi. And this was the evening before. And so it's not even 1 or 2 minutes, I think. But just to see there what they call how women prepare themselves to receive the testimonies. And then I'll go to a poetic visual. For the poetic visual, I have to, when we show it, do you think you could be there and translate into sure. Espanol? Sure. Yes? Okay. No so problem. Now let's have someone looking at the, turning off the lights and turning it on as soon as it's finished. And Claudia? If you will just run this, it's a one-line song. And you know, somewhere like that woman in Pakistan that entered some part of my soul, this one-line song, Senzenina, simply says, what have we done? What have we done? Please translate that. Alejandro, wait 1 minute, Claudia.
Okay, so esto es de una corte de la pobreza en Nairobi, 99. La idea es cómo prepararse, son como... lugares de encuentro para las mujeres para prepararse para recibir los testimonios. Y hay diferentes experiencias, movimientos, citó Mujeres en Negro, que algunos de ustedes deben conocer, pero son cómo prepararse para la experiencia de recibir los testimonios. Entonces, lo que vamos a ver es una canción de una sola línea, y la canción dice ¿qué hemos hecho? Y esta es la noche anterior a la corte en 99, corte por la pobreza en Nairobi. Donde se están preparando para recibir
los testimonios. This was on poverty, and these were the caravans to prepare women to come to the court from all over the country.
Son caravanas, okay, que están preparando mujeres de todas partes del país.
It's
para
just
venir
one
a la
minute.
Corte. Es un minuto. You want me to go over there?
No, this there's no words, okay. So it's just the next one.
Thank you.
You know, at the courts, we at the last court in South Africa, this was we had 5,000 women.
Wow.
Yes, and the courts are usually 2,000, 3,000 in India. The last one, the Indonesia court was smaller because we did that with the UNDP. The UNDP, for some reason, is very interested in the methodology, but we have to be a little careful.
How many days?
The courts, at least 3 days.
Yeah.
Because we have the round tables, and this is when the court, but to prepare that court to reach that moment of the event, it is, I say, the process is more important than the event. So the process is, take the Columbia court, we've been at the process for the last 3 years now, and the court is now fixed for March 2011. So, but till all the so it also is a way of bringing the groups together. I simply say I put violence against women in the center. I really don't mind which political party or group or whatever you belong to. If you are against that violence against women, if you are against the violence that women are killed as they are killed in Colombia, and you want to come into the courts, please let's work. So it's a kind of way of working that also creates a non-confrontational. I'm also very strong on the kind of politics, you know. There is, if we just prepare or hold this great court as we held that in the UN Habitat, and it was the UN Habitat Center, it was wonderfully organized and everything. But if the process to reach there denies what we are saying, then we don't need to do it. So very often we delay our courts till we are able to understand the new politics, the politics of care, the politics of concern. When I work with the women on the courts, by the time we get to the 2 years or 3 years of working together, I have not had a court where there has been the kind of, you know, confrontation, the kind of political ways in which to, we try to resolve all that in a kind of way that says, this violence we have to stop. This violence against women we have to make unthinkable. And so we need everybody, men and women and everybody, to come into this to help us to stop that violence.
La pregunta era si todo mundo está invitado, quién está invitado y cuánto dura. Y dice, bueno, todo el mundo, absolutamente todo el mundo está invitado, cualquier persona que esté, hombres o mujeres que estén de alguna manera en contra de la violencia, está invitado. En la última que se hizo en Sudáfrica hubo 5,000 personas, en la India generalmente son 2,000 o 3,000, y lo más importante de todo es el proceso, o sea, la corte en sí dura unos 3 días, pero el proceso puede durar como 3 años, como el caso de la que se está preparando para Colombia ahora, que lleva 3 años de preparación. El proceso es lo más importante, porque es el momento en que se genera esta conciencia de que la violencia contra la mujer es absolutamente inaceptable y que se tiene que luchar contra ella. Si el proceso no está de acuerdo con lo que se está tratando de llegar, entonces se para, ¿no? Y no se realiza hasta que el proceso lleve, o sea, lo más importante de todo es el proceso.
Alejandro, you might want to go there to read it better, okay?
Now
what I'm going to put on the screen now for you is just an example of a poetic visual, okay? So they are still at the aesthetic of the court, so this is the poetic visual, and then I'll come to the harder testimony. This is before the session on resistance. So you would have women who were bringing testimonies of resistance. You would have the analytical or the movement people speaking. So please, if you can go into that with the lights off. Okay. You know, before we go into, I'll stop it after this one for the discussion, because I also want to show you two or three indigenous women. But this one, since I did the Columbia court, which we are preparing, the other court which we are preparing is in the U.S. It's the first court that we will do in the North. I told you all our courts have been in the Global South. But we are working with the Poor and Homeless People's Campaign in the U.S., in Philadelphia. And here is the woman who leads that campaign. So I want you to see that in the U.S., the women who are home, she's been in and out of jail all the time. Whenever she comes, she speaks at one of our courts and she goes back and she gets arrested. That is Sherry Honkala. She's Puerto Rican, and she herself is a homeless and poor mother, a single mother. So can we have her? This is at the Cape Town court. Now the Cape Town court. Where is Alejandro? Alejandro, finish this. Yes, please.
Todas las cortes que, como había mencionado, todas las cortes que se han realizado hasta ahora son en el sur global. Esta es la primera que se hace fuera del sur global. Es una que se va a hacer en Filadelfia, donde es un movimiento de mujeres desamparadas, sin hogar y pobres. Y la persona que vamos a ver es una de las líderes del movimiento, es puertorriqueña, ha estado encarcelada muchas veces, ella misma no tiene hogar.
Okay, this court that you're going to see is called the World Court of Women Against War for Peace, and this was held in Cape Town in South Africa. That was in 2001. In South Africa, you must know that Nelson Mandela is our honorary president in El Taler. So all the doors get open in South Africa. So we opened the court in the parliament. I mean, it's something, even in the Indian parliament will not allow me near the gate. But in South Africa, we opened the court in the parliament in South Africa. 5,000 women came, and the whole country was involved for about 2 years in the court. So it was one of the most precious experiences that we've had. Here you have Sherry speaking, and she is the one who's working with us to prepare now the court in the U.S., which will be held in 2011 in June or September or something like that. Yes. So please.
Entonces esta es la corte que se realizó en Sudáfrica, en Cape Town, Mujeres contra la Guerra. Y como en Sudáfrica Nelson Mandela está en el poder, se abren todas las puertas. Entonces lo que cuenta es que esta corte de hecho fue realizada en el parlamento. Dice que en la India no la dejan ni acercarse al parlamento. Y que esta fue una experiencia muy interesante. Durante 2 años el país entero estuvo involucrado con esta cuestión de las cortes. La persona que vamos a ver es justamente Sherry, la persona que está ayudando a organizar la próxima corte en los Estados Unidos que se realiza en el 2011.
I'm a formerly homeless.
Sí, sí, mejor porque si no. Fui una persona sin hogar. Una madre sin hogar y vengo de Kensington, que es el distrito más pobre de Filadelfia, que está en el país más rico del mundo, los Estados Unidos de América. En nuestro país tenemos más prisiones que en cualquier otro país del mundo. Y estas prisiones están llenas de pobres, gente encarcelada en el país de las riquezas. Por eso organizar en el vientre de la bestia es sumamente peligroso y necesario. Toda mi vida y la existencia de hombres y mujeres con los que trabajo es ilegal. Luchamos para sobrevivir, necesitamos huir de la ley para poder alimentar a la gente y darles hogar. Para construir un movimiento de pobres he sido arrestada más de 70 veces tratando de conseguir alimentos y casas para hombres, mujeres y niños sin hogar. Cuando regreso a casa, enfrento 4 otras violaciones contra la ley. Y todo lo que me sucede y a este movimiento, ustedes no lo van a saber. Porque nuestro país controla los medios también.
That's the jury.
Ese es el jurado. Y están luchando todos los días para que desaparezcamos y crear la imagen de que todo está bien en el país de la riqueza. Pero mientras amemos a nuestros hijos, usaremos nuestra voz y no seremos silenciadas.
We will tell the
contaremos la historia de cómo esos sueños americanos se han vuelto pesadillas americanas. Y cómo y mientras nuestro país financia la muerte de gente en todo el mundo, continuaremos a alimentar a la gente, continuaremos a darles hogar a la gente y continuaremos a hacer todo lo que podamos hacer. Y aunque continúen atacándonos porque estamos revelando las contradicciones de nuestro país, continuaremos ayudando las luchas de los pobres en todo el mundo. Los que piensan que no hay hambre en Estados Unidos, hoy les pregunto que vuelvan, que lo piensen dos veces. Los que piensen que no lloramos ríos de lágrimas, los que dormimos en el pavimento con nuestros niños, piénsenlo dos veces. Y los que piensen que los pobres en los Estados Unidos no se están organizando y no pueden voltear el país de cabeza, piénsenlo dos veces. Tenemos los recursos y la habilidad de darle alimento y hogar a todo mundo. Juntos acabaremos con la pobreza. Porque es posible y porque debemos hacerlo. Gracias.
Now we shall stop for some questions, and then I want to then so that we give you a break also to look at some of the testimonies of indigenous women. Okay?
Entonces una pausa para preguntas y después veremos algunos testimonios de mujeres indígenas.
Clarificatory questions, comments? Yes, please.
I'm sorry,
Irene, no?
Yes.
Yeah.
I missed her charges and what she's facing when she gets back.
You see, she's organizing the poor and homeless people. Mm-hmm. So she goes and takes food. So sometimes she's caught taking food to feed the people. She occupies houses to house people. It's snowing, it's raining, and huge houses are locked up. So somewhere she says that we must have another kind of justice. And that's what Sherry Hongkala does. She's a whole movement there in the United States.
See,
and she's someone extremely brave, and all of us love her very much.
Sí, lo que está sufriendo de la persecución legal es porque, bueno, ocupan casas, ocupan edificios para la gente que no tiene hogar. Entonces están luchando para otro tipo de justicia.
It's 5:30. What time do we want to break? Six.
Six,
yes. Yes. Okay, so the questions and the testimony. Mercedes, please, you.
Yo quería preguntar,
I wanted to ask.
Muy interesante.
I think your work is
very
interesting, very close to what we do in small parts.
Pero a mí me gustaría saber,
but I would like
cómo
to know,
le dan seguimiento.
How do you
cuando
follow
se termina la actividad de la
after
corte,
the court?
It's a very good question. Because the courts are built or have their roots with the local organizations. The courts don't come from the outside to create the court. The court works with women's organizations nationally, regionally. If you do a court of indigenous women, which can be at the Dream of the Americas, it will be the women there that will work towards the creating of that court and will sustain it and will continue the work after. It's like the work is there and then you have the court with women coming together and then the court goes away. And then the kinds of ways in which you want for the court to express itself as a continuation, as the Arab women wanted to create a permanent court of women in the Arab world. They failed, but they wanted to do that. So it depends on the women's groups, the local women's groups, the national groups. The court becomes yours. The Columbia Court of Women is the Columbia Court of Women. I have been working with them for three years now, with the workshops, with the teaching of the methodology, with the working with the testifiers, all this work. But the Columbia Court belongs to the Columbia women. And what you do with that court is for the Columbia women to decide. So the continued work is done by the local organization.
La base de las cortes son las organizaciones locales. Entonces, el trabajo que está presente es lo que hace que surja la corte. Entonces, durante todo ese proceso de la corte, esto se solidifica en las organizaciones, que pueden ser locales, nacionales, regionales, indígenas, por ejemplo, con las organizaciones indígenas, de manera que cuando termina la corte, el trabajo continúa porque está ahí en las cortes. Ella ha trabajado, por ejemplo, la corte árabe decidió crear una corte permanente después de la corte, pero son decisiones que vienen de las propias organizaciones locales que dan origen a la corte.
She's asking about women who cannot leave
their home because of their husbands
in the Middle East, whether they can somehow get to the courts if they're not being allowed to leave their homes.
You know, we have done two courts in the Arab world. The Arab world is difficult. We can't even say there's violence sometimes. In Beirut, it was relatively easier. But so it has to be done in a completely different way. It is in camera. It is 500 women and men in a room. It has to be done in a very careful way. And when you say the Middle East, yes, the Maghreb and the Mashrek, riddled with politics, so that women are often divided by political parties and by political affiliations. So it becomes, unless women are able to say, okay, that violence against women, I can be any political party, but I'm going to work against that violence. It is a way, Mercedes, of bringing people together also. It's amazing what we were able to do in a country like South Africa or even Colombia. The Ruta Pacifica is the big Ruta, and now they are in the court. So many, many groups in Colombia work now. And that's what I try to do. My role is more to facilitate that kind of process. And then the women, often in countries, women don't work too much together. But, you know, like we've just done a court on dowry in India, and we've got almost all the groups working on dowry in India to work with us on the court, which took us 2 years or 3 years to do. But it comes like that, okay?
Las cortes en el Medio Oriente son sumamente complicadas, ¿no? A veces ni siquiera sabe uno que hay la violencia porque está tan escondida es muy difícil, es muy complicado. Hay una complicación de que las mujeres muchas veces están sumamente divididas porque está muy politizado por la cuestión de partidos políticos, etcétera. Las cortes lo que intentan hacer es justamente ser ese local donde se pueden romper esas divisiones. Políticas partidarias. Entonces, en Colombia han tenido mucho éxito, en la India con las cortes sobre la dote, ¿no? Donde esas divisiones, bueno, se logran eliminar creando estos espacios. Y ese es el trabajo que hace ella, es como de facilitadora de estos espacios.
Thank you, Alejandro. Now what we're going to view are two indigenous women. Mililani Trask, does anybody know her? She was head of the Indigenous Women's Network from Hawaii. And Yvette Abrahams, who's Koi Koi from South Africa, indigenous woman again.
As late as 1890,
people would say, oh, there's a slave down, that's where they sold my grandmother. So we have
es una esclava.
To forget.
Entonces no tenemos tanto tiempo, no hemos tenido tanto tiempo para olvidar la esclavitud. Nos han silenciado, pero recordamos lo que nos sucedió. Como los primeros pueblos, fuimos esclavizados en nuestra propia tierra. Y estoy aquí para decirles cómo fue eso. También me gustaría hablar de la esclavitud como la violación institucionalizada. Hemos sentido la esclavitud no solo como un sistema de racismo, sino de sexismo. La esclavitud es un sistema en el que la violación está normalizada. Y esto era un derecho para el dueño, para el hijo del dueño, violar una mujer esclava. La institucionalización de la violación es una herramienta ideológica de la supremacía blanca. Para el dueño de las esclavas tenían mucho valor como prostitutas. La violación es un acto de violencia física, pero también es una violación de la mente. Te convierten en cosa, destruyen aquello que es humano en ti. Destruyen el espíritu del Creador. Se han hecho investigaciones sobre lo que esto hace en los individuos. Y se hablan de lo que se llama el síndrome de violación, del trauma de violación. Y voy a leerles los síntomas. Entonces hay imaginaciones de ficticias de la violación. Entonces, habiendo sido violada una vez, la sobreviviente sigue siendo violada una y otra vez. Otro síntoma es evitar la memoria. Mientras trata de olvidar el dolor terrible del evento, la víctima trata de evitar pensamientos, actividades o situaciones que puedan traerle a la memoria el evento, como ver las noticias en la televisión o leer el periódico, o contar su propia historia a sus hijos. Por lo tanto, hemos sido silenciadas de afuera y de dentro. Y nos ha tomado más de un siglo para empezar a hablar.
Thank you, Alejandro. And now, because we must all go to our 6 o'clock meeting, I'm only going to ask Claudia to just play for us so that we end on a note of hope. Mercedes Sosa and Viva La.
Y entonces, bueno, como tenemos que irnos, vamos a terminar escuchando Mercedes Sosa.
Si se calla el cantor, calla la vida. Porque la vida misma es todo un canto. Si se calla el cantor, muere de espanto. La esperanza, la luz y la alegría, si se calla el canto, se quedan solos los humildes gorriones de los diarios. Los obreros del puerto se persiguen, ¿quién habrá de luchar por sus salarios? ¿Qué ha de ser de la vida si el que canta
no levanta su voz en las tribunas por el que sufre, por el que no hay ninguna razón que lo condene a andar sin manta. Si se calla el cantor, muere la rosa. ¿De qué sirve la rosa sin el canto? Debe el canto ser luz sobre los campos, iluminando siempre a los de abajo. Que no calle el canto, porque el silencio cobarde apaña la maldad que oprime. No saben los cantores de agachar, no callarán jamás de frente al crimen. Que se levanten todas las banderas cuando el cantor se plante con su grito. Que mil guitarras desangren en la noche una inmortal canción al infinito. Si se calla el cantor, calla la vida.
Mm-hmm.